Unit 3, Sher Shah and Akbar. Structure. 3.0, Objectives. 3.1, Introduction. 3.2, Sher Shah and his early career. 3.3, his rise and conquest. 3.4, Sher Shah's administration. 3.5, estimate of Sher Shah. 3.6, Akbar, his early life. 3.7, assumption of power and extension of empire. 3.8, his Rajput policy. 3.9, his religious policy. 3.10, administration of Akbar. 3.11, estimate of Akbar. 3.12, let us sum up. 3.13, check your progress. 3.0, objectives. This unit is intended to highlight the rise of Sher Shah, his conquests, and administrative reforms. Further, we will be able to learn that how Akbar the Great came to power after the Second Battle of Panipat in 1556 AD. Also, we will study his religious policy and administrative reforms. After reading this unit, you should be able to 1. Learn about the rise of Sher Shah and his conquests. 2. Know about his administrative reforms. 3. Understand the circumstances leading to Akbar's assumption of power. 4. Study his Rajput and religious policy. 5. Find out his administrative reforms. 3.1. Introduction. It is necessary to know the historical circumstance which favored the establishment of the Sur dynasty in 1540 and the assumption of the throne of Delhi by Akbar in 1556. Sher Shah Suri, who deserves the credit of overthrowing the Mughal dynasty in 1540, is counted among the great rulers who ever reigned in India. Sher Shah established the Second Afghan Empire under the family of Surs in North India. Sher Shah is among one of those great personalities of history who had an humble beginning but succeeded in establishing a powerful empire by the power of the sword. Whatever he achieved simply by his own efforts and capability. Further, we will study how Akbar alone has been acclaimed the great among the rulers of medieval India. He completed the conquest of northern India, made the Mughal Empire not only the strongest state in India, but also one of the best administrated state of his times. Innovated certain policies which proved liberal, far-sighted and successful, which added a new chapter in Indian history and established the Mughal Empire firmly in India. Therefore, he has been justly described as the great among Mughal emperors of India. 3.2. Sher Shah and his early career. Sher Khan, 1472 to 1545 AD, better known as Sher Shah, was the Emperor of India from 1540 to 1545 and established the Sur dynasty which ruled over North India till 1556 AD. Sher Khan, whose original name was Farid Khan, was the son of petty Afghan Jagirdar of Sasaram in Bihar and got a training in administration in his father's estate. But the indifferent treatment that he received from his father turned him into a soldier of fortune. In 1522, he entered into the service of Bahar Khan Lohani, who conferred upon him the title of Sher Khan for having killed a tiger single-handed. But he soon afterwards entered the service of Babur, who rewarded him with the restoration of his father's Jagir of Sasaram. Sher Khan, on his return, joined the service of the Lohani king, Jabal Khan of Bihar, and married the widow of Taj Khan, the lord of Chunar, and got the important fort. There in 1531, when Chunar was invaded by Emperor Humayun, Sher Khan cleverly saved himself and retained the fortress. 2 years later, he defeated Mahmud Shah, the king of Bengal, at the Battle of Surajgarh and thus became the undisputed ruler of Bihar. He then made two attacks on Bengal and thus brought upon him the attack by Humayun in 1537. Sher Khan inveigled him into Bengal, outgeneraled him and defeated him severely at the Battle of Chausa near Buxar in 1539. Humayun escaped by the skin of his teeth, but Sher Khan now became the de facto ruler of the whole of eastern India from Kannauj to Assam and assumed the title of Sher Shah in order to signify his independent status. Next year, Sher Shah again defeated Humayun at the Battle of Bilgram near Kannauj and marched on to Delhi in 1540 AD and made Humayun homeless. 3.3. His rise and conquest. Having seated himself on the throne of Delhi, Sher Shah turned his attention towards the expansion of his dominions. Within a short time, he occupied the whole of Punjab, then he marched against the hill tribes of the Gaukur country and he ravaged the whole territory. In 1541, he marched against Bengal and dismissed the rebel governor. He remodeled the government of Bengal on an efficient basis. Sher Shah next turned his attention towards the Rajputs. In 1542, he invaded Malwa and occupied Gwalior, Sarangpur and Ujjain. On his way back, he occupied the strong fortress of Ranthambore. He remained for 1 year at Agra in peace, during which period he devoted his time for recognizing the administration of his kingdom. In 1543, he marched against Purnal of Raisin. The fort of Raisin was occupied after bitter fighting. Sher Shah broke the promise of safe conduct to the Rajput by attacking them when they came out of the fort. This incident has been considered as a severe blow on the character of Sher Shah. Sindh and Multan were occupied by the governor. In 1544, Sher Shah led an expedition against Maldev, the Rajput ruler of Mewar. He frightened the ruler through forged letters and made him to withdraw from the fort. However, the Rajput warriors fought with desperate valor under their leaders Jeta and Kama to meet with warrior deaths. Sher Shah won a victory at a great cost. He exclaimed that he had lost an empire for a handful of bajra or millet. Then he attacked the fort of Kalenjar. He succeeded in capturing the fort but died from an accidental explosion of gunpowder on 22nd May 1545. Thus ended the glorious reign of Sher Shah. He ruled for about 5 years. During a short period, Sher Shah established an extensive empire. 3.4. Sher Shah's administration. Sher Shah was not only a great conqueror and a successful military general, but also a great ruler and administrator. Central government. The administrative system of Sher Shah was based upon centralized despotism. As the ruler, he possessed almost unlimited powers. Though Sher Shah's government was a highly centralized system, which all the powers were concentrated in the hands of the king, he was an enlightened despot who cared much for the welfare of the people. Besides the king, there were ministers and many minor officials in the central government. The ministers were in charge of various departments. Sher Shah gave much attention to the personal supervision of administration. Provincial government. He divided the empire into 47 sarkars for the convenience of administration. The sarkars were further subdivided into many paraganas. Each paragana had one sikdar, one amin or munsif, one potadar or treasurer, and two karnukunas, one Hindu and one Persian writer to keep accounts. The sarkars were under the control of sikdar-e-sikdarana and munsif-e-munsifin. There was transfer of officials to check influence of the officers. Sher Shah recognized the autonomy of the village and maintained contact with them through potwari and chaukidar. Revenue system. The revenue of the empire was derived from several sources, can be divided into two main groups, central revenue and local revenue. The local revenue was derived from a variety of taxes levied on the production and consumption of various articles, trades, profession and transport. The source of central revenue was land revenue, dizya, hairless property, commerce, mines, presents, salts, customs and khams, or 1/5 of his plunder taken during war. The land revenue was the most important source of revenue. Sher Shah thoroughly reorganized the whole system of land revenue. His revenue reforms were based on wise and human principles. They have unique importance in the administrative history of India because they served as a model for future reforms. After careful survey of the lands, he settled the land revenue directly with the cultivators. The land was divided into three classes, namely good, middling and bad. The state demand of revenue was fixed as 1/3 or 1/4 of the average produce. It was payable either in cash or kind. Sher Shah instructed the revenue officials to show leniency at the time of assessment and be strict at the time of collection of revenues. The state gave pata or title deed to each cultivator containing the revenue he was required to pay. Each cultivator was required to sign the kabuliyat or deed of agreements signifying his assent to pay the amount of revenue mentioned. Remission of rents were made and probably loans were advanced to the tenants in case of damage to crops caused by encampment of soldiers or rain. Currency reforms. The reforms of the currency has been conspired to one of the most important achievements of Sher Shah. He not only introduced some specific changes in the main but also tried to rectify the progressive deterioration of the previous kings. He issued a large number of silver coins and abolished all old and mixed metal currency. He fixed the ratio between silver and copper coins. It originated with him. He also introduced gold coins and fixed their exchange ratio. These currency reforms proved useful to the general public as well as trading community. Trade and commerce. Sher Shah encouraged trade and commerce by abolishing numerous duties. He laid down not only two duties should be charged on the transport of goods intended for sale. All internal customs were abolished. These reforms encouraged trade and commerce and brought about a great commercial prosperity. Roads and sarais. One of the greatest achievements of Sher Shah in administration was the construction of roads connecting important parts of his empire with his capital. He repaired many old roads and constructed new ones. He planted shade giving trees and trees of fruits on both sides of the roads. Sher Shah built a number of sarais for the stay of travelers and government officers. Separate arrangements were made for both Hindus and Muslims. Each sarai had a temple and mosque. The sarai was also used as a dak chowki. A daroga-e-dak chowki was appointed by Sher Shah. A large number of news writers and news carriers were employed and the king got daily reports regarding what was happening in various parts of the country. This system worked so efficiently that Sher Shah was able to get information from all parts of the dominion. Military administration. Sher Shah maintained an efficient and strong army. His army consisted mostly of Afghans. He reorganized the army on the principles of Jalaluddin Khilji's military system. He maintained a permanent standing army, which was paid partly by grant of jagirs and partly in cash from the royal treasury, was commanded and officered by competent men selected and appointed by Sher Shah himself. He revived Alauddin's system of branding of horses. Troops were maintained at different strategic points in the kingdom. Sher Shah enforced strict discipline in the army and took ample precautions to prevent corruption among the soldiers. Justice. Sher Shah is very famous for giving justice to all concerned. No person could escape punishment on account of his status. The courts presided over the Qazi and Mir Adil tried civil cases. The Hindus settled their disputes in the panchayats. However, in criminal cases, everybody was subject to the law of the state. Religious policy. Sher Shah was a Sunni Muslim and strictly followed the principles of Islam in his personal life. That is why he arranged charity for the poor. The expenditure of the royal kitchen was 500 gold mohurs every day, and food was distributed freely to all needy persons. He was a man of religious toleration. He left Hindus undisturbed and allowed them to follow their own religious practice without any hindrance. Art and architecture. Sher Shah was a great builder. He built many magnificent buildings throughout his empire. The Purana Qila at Delhi is said to have been built by him, and he erected a big mosque in its enclosure. The best example of his buildings was his own tomb at Sasaram in Bihar. It was the best specimens of architecture of its kind in the country. Sher Shah died in 1545 AD and the Sur dynasty established by him continued for only 10 years afterwards. The weak rulers who succeeded him provided an opportunity for Humayun to reoccupy the kingdom of Hindustan, which he did in 1555. 3.5. Estimate of Sher Shah. Sher Shah was one of the greatest emperors of India. He was a gallant soldier, a consummate general, a man of great resourcefulness, a master of statecraft. He stands out as an outstanding personality in Indian history. Though he was born in humble circumstances, he succeeded in creating an empire. He was brave, adventurous, shrewd, diplomatic, dynamic and energetic. He was capable of sustained hard work of the state for 18 to 20 hours a day. He came on the scene at a critical time when Babur had a decisive blow to the power and prestige of the Afghans, but the way in which he managed to survive and withstand the Mughal shock made him an undisputed leader of the Afghan. He was a prince of destiny and possessed a clear vision of the future. In the post-Panipat period, he was the hope and promise of the Afghans in India. Sher Shah possessed from determination and firm will. No misfortune or failure could demoralize him. He was precise, exact, cautious and thorough in whatever he planned or performed. He never considered work, however small, as below his dignity. He was never carried away by his success, but took every victory as a stepping stone for future successes. In a period of trial, he remained firm and exercised a great self-control. He never attempted a thing that was impossible, and there was nothing impossible which he laid his heart upon. He was not satisfied with half measures and never left to work half done. He was a stern realist and a practical man of action. He was a man of varied talents and wide experience. He has been compared with Henry VII of England, Frederick, William I of Germany, Ashoka, Babur, Kautilya and Machiavelli. But the one personality which comes nearest to him was that of Shivaji. 3.6. Akbar is early life. Akbar was one of the world's greatest historical figures, was born to Humayun and Hamida Banu on 15th October 1542 AD at Amarkot. His early years were spent in neglect, adversity and without parental care and supervision. A few months after his birth, he was separated from his parents and was taken to Kwandar and thence to Kabul as a captive of his uncles, Askari and Kamran. Though his uncles took care of him, his life was not free from danger. He rejoined his parents in 1545 when Humayun occupied Kwandar and Kabul. He made some arrangements for the education of the prince, but Akbar was not inclined towards learning through books. Prince Akbar spent his time in sports, in camel and horse riding, in hunting and in taming animals. Humayun also placed Akbar in charge of the government of Ghazni. When Akbar was only 10 years old, Humayun's intention was to train him in the science and art of government. Akbar accompanied his father when the latter marched against the Afghans in India to recover his lost kingdom. Punjab was occupied by Humayun and Akbar was made the governor of Punjab. Bairam Khan, a trusted officer of Humayun, was made his guardian. Bairam Khan was a companion of Emperor Humayun, was appointed by him as the guardian of his minor son Akbar. On the death of Humayun in 1556, Bairam Khan took the initiative and necessary measures for proclaiming Akbar as the successor of Humayun on the throne of Delhi. But Delhi was soon lost, and it was the energy and generalship of Bairam Khan which enabled Akbar to win the second battle of Panipat in 1556 and recover the throne of Delhi. For the next 4 years, Bairam Khan acted as the regent of the minor king, and during these 4 years, the Mughal army conquered under his direction Gwalior, Ajmer, and Jaunpur. Bairam also began arrangements for the conquest of Malwa, but Bairam had been exercising his powers rather steadily and thus irritated not only many Mughals of high position, but even also Akbar. The young emperor, who was only 18 years of age, decided to take up the administration into his own hand. He therefore dismissed Bairam Khan in 1560 from his post of regent and protector. Bairam at first peacefully submitted and started for Mecca, but on second thought, he rose in rebellion. Bairam was defeated and was leniently treated by Akbar, who allowed him again to proceed to Mecca. But on his way to Mecca, he was murdered by a private enemy at Patan in Gujarat in 1561. His minor son, Abdul Rahman, later on rose high in the service of Akbar. 3.7. Akbar's assumption of power and extension of empire. After the death of Humayun, Akbar was proclaimed emperor on 14th February 1556 at Kalanur in Punjab, and all the officers paid homage to him. He was just 14 years old at the time of his coronation. Soon after his ascension, Hemu, the capable general and minister of Adil Shah Sur, came forward to oppose the Mughals. He first occupied Delhi and Agra and assumed the title of Raja Vikramaditya. He met Akbar and Bairam Khan on the historical battlefield of Panipat on 5th November 1556 AD with a large army, including 1500 war elephants. In the beginning, he was successful, but the day was decided by a chance arrow which struck him in the eye. He fell unconscious. His soldiers, deprived of their leader, fled from the battlefield. In this helpless condition, Hemu was put to death. The result of the second battle of Panipat was decisive. It brought to close the Afghan-Mughal contest for supremacies in India. In this contest, the verdict was decided in favor of the Mughals. The victors soon occupied Delhi and Agra, and Akbar's sovereignty over Hindustan became real as well as fact. He disposed of claimants to the throne one by one. Extension of Akbar's empire. Within the next 5 years, he not only consolidated his hold over his territories, but also established his sway over the valley of the Gangas and the Jamuna, as far east as Allahabad, as well as over Gwalior in central India and Ajmer in Rajasthan. Within the next 20 years, Akbar conquered the whole of North India except Kashmir, Sindh and Orissa. These three kingdoms he also annexed to his dominions by 1592. Already in 1581, he had reduced to submission his younger brother Hakim, who ruled as an independent king in Kabul, which became a part of Akbar's empire on Hakim's death in 1585. 10 years later, he acquired Kandahar and annexed Balochistan, having thus completed. The conquest of North India, Akbar sought to conquer Southern India. He stormed Ahmednagar in 1600 and captured Abirgarh in Khandesh in 1601. That was his last conquest. At his death, 4 years later, Akbar's empire extended from Kabul in the west to Bengal in the east and from the foot of the Himalayas in the north to the river Narmada in the south. It was a vast empire which Akbar divided into the following 15 subhas or provinces. 1. Kabul. 2. Lahore. 3. Multan, including Sindh. 4. Delhi. 5. Agra. 6. Awadh. 7. Allahabad. 8. Ajmer. 9. Ahmedabad, Gujarat. 10. Malwa. 11. Bihar. 12. Bengal, including Orissa. 13. Khandesh. 14. Berar. And 15. Ahmednagar. Akbar as an administrator and empire builder. Akbar was great not only as a conqueror, but also as an administrator, an empire builder. He gave to his empire an administrative system which was much superior to the one that had prevailed before. His was an autocracy organized on a bureaucratic basis. Its chief aim was the enhancement and maintenance of the personality and the revenue of the Mansabdars. They were divided into 36 classes, from Mansabdars of 10 to those of 51,000. They were paid salaries in cash. Various recalls were drawn up to prevent mad practices, especially the practice of fraudulent rulers. Over each Subha there was a Subedar, also called a Nawab Nazim, who exercised a great deal of power and held his miniature court as under and put an effective check on their powers by creating a new post of the Diwan, who was placed in charge of the provincial finances. To improve his finances, Akbar, with the assistance of Raja Jodar Mal, organized the land revenue. System on the basis of survey according to the uniform standard of measurement, settlement directly with the ryots or cultivators, assessment at the rate of one-third of the produce, which could be paid either in cash or in kind, and was collected by the officers appointed and paid by the state. Akbar is preeminent amongst the Hindu-Muslim rulers as an empire builder. Earlier Muslim resettlers of India had not cared at all for their non-Muslim subjects, and the relationship between him and their Hindu subjects, who found the majority of the population, was one of chronic warfare and hostility very early in his career. Akbar realized that the emperor of Hindustan must not be the king of the Muslim only. His rule, if it was to be firmly established, must be broad-based on the foundation of general loyalty, accorded willingly by the Hindus and Muslims alike. He therefore adopted a policy of conciliation and liberalism. He abolished the policy of condemning slavery, the members of the families of rulers defeated and dethroned by him. He treated their womenfolk with honor and ordered the vanquished princes honorable careers in his own service. He abolished sectarian taxes like the pilgrim's tax and the jizya, which were imposed only on the Hindus, and appointed them to high offices according to their talents. He intermarried with Hindu princesses and accepted them as members of the royal family, instead of imposing upon them the obligation of embracing Islam. This liberal and conciliatory attitude turned the Hindu Rajputs into his staunch supporters, and it was Rajput valor that cooperated with the Mohammedan soldiers of Akbar to extend his dominion from Kabul to Bengal. Last but not the least, Akbar dreamt of creating an Indian nation out of the fighting Hindus and Muslims in India. 3.8. Akbar's Rajput policy. Akbar is famous for his Rajput policy. He opened a new chapter in this direction. The Rajputs were the leaders of the Hindus in the military field, and they were well known for their bravery. No wonder Akbar, who wanted to found his empire on the willing cooperation of the Hindus, decided to win over the Rajputs. Many Rajputs were taken into the Mughal service. Many were made Mansabdars. The jizya was abolished. Pilgrim's tax was also abolished. Everything was done to remove the feeling among the Rajput they were being discriminated against. It was this policy of reconciliation towards the Hindus in general and the Rajputs in particular which enabled Akbar to conquer the whole of northern India and a part of the Deccan. In 1562, Akbar married the eldest daughter of Raja Bihar Mal of Jaipur. As a result of this marriage, Akbar took Raja Bhagwan Das to Singh into the Mughal service. Both of the occupied offices of trust and responsibility were held by Rajputs, and they helped Akbar in many wars. They were entrusted with the most difficult jobs by him. In 1584, Akbar married Prince Salim to the daughter of Raja Bhagwan Das. In 1570, he married Rajput princesses from Bikaner and Jaisalmer. In this way, Akbar was able to win most of the Rajput states. Thus, by a policy of conciliation, Akbar was able to win over the affection of the Rajputs and thereby solidify the foundations of the Mughal Empire in the country. It was the reversal of the policy in the time of Aurangzeb that proved to be the undoing of his empire. 3.9. Akbar's religious policy. The religious policy of Akbar has been admired and praised by many historians. His religious policy was the outcome of gradual evaluation. Akbar's liberal ideas and Catholic temperament with regard to religion were the result of many reasons. Very early in his reign, Akbar followed the policy of farsightedness and statesmanship. Akbar, during his empire in India, cannot be built without the active cooperation of the Hindus, who constitutes the majority of the population in this land. So he went to abolish the jizya and the pilgrim taxes imposed upon the Hindus by the previous Muslim rulers. He employed Hindus freely to important posts and positions in the empire. He participated freely in the broad-mindedness and liberal outlook made him to notice issues such as ordinances prohibiting child marriage and prohibiting the killing of animals on certain days in his empire. He did everything to gain the sympathies and affection of the Hindus and thereby earned the name as the first national monarch in the history of India. Akbar also attempted to bring about the synthesis of all religions in his time with a view to end religious bigotry and disunities. With this object in view, in 1575, he erected a building in Fatehpur Sikri called Ibadat Khana, or House of Worship. At first, he summoned the learned teachers of Islam, but their discussion dissatisfied Akbar. He therefore called to the Ibadat Khan the wise men of different religions such as Hinduism, Jainism, Zoroastrianism, and Christianity. He patiently attended the deliberation of all these learned divinities. He was convinced about the fundamental unity of all religions. He then went to evolve out a new religion called Din-e-Ilahi, or Divine Faith. It was the result of the combination of what was best in all the great religions of the world. As a firm believer in the policy of the universal toleration, Akbar made no attempt to force his religion on others and appeal to their inner feelings. During his life, Akbar was able to have only 18 converts to his new religion. Akbar's highest political object was the fusion of Hinduism and Islam and establishment of the cultural as well as political unites in the empire. Akbar was not only a great military conqueror and empire builder, but also a great statesman and administrator. Endowed with the great genius he gave of his vast empire, even though he was engaged continuously in one of their conquests, he found time to introduce many reforms in the field of administration. The credit of introducing an elaborate and enduring system of administration for the Mughal Empire goes entirely to Akbar. There was no doubt that Akbar owed very much to Sher Shah in the field of administration, yet with his genius he gave them a new shape and new outlook. Central government. Akbar was the overall in charge of the central government. All the extensive judicial and legislative powers of the state were combined in him. There were no limitations on his despotism and his word was law. But Akbar had always had the welfare of his people in mind, and so he was a benevolent despotism. He himself supervised all the branches of his administration and worked hard to discharge his manifold duties. He would hold an open court and listen to the complaints of his subjects and try to pacify them. Akbar was assisted by a number of his ministers in the discharge of his duties. Among others, the most important ministers were Prime Ministers Wakil, Finance Minister Diwan, Paymaster or General Mir Bakshi, and Chief Sardar Sardar-e-Sadur. The Wakil maintained a general control of all the central departments and acted as the chief advisor of the king. The Finance Minister or Diwan was in charge of finance and revenue. All money bills had to bear his signatures. He recommended the appointments of provincial Diwans to the king. The Paymaster General, or of all the Mansabdar and distributed Chief Sardar or Sardar-e-Sadar, acted as the religious advisors to the king, dispersed the royal charity and discharged the function of the Chief Justice of the Empire. He recommended the appointments of the provincial Qazis. The provincial administration. For the sake of efficiency, Akbar divided his vast empire into well-defined provinces and established a uniform administration in them. In 1602 AD, the number of such provinces was 15. The credit of organizing the provincial administration on scientific lines particularly goes to Akbar. He appointed honest and efficient officers to run the administration of provinces. In each subah or province, there was a subedar, a diwan, a bakshi, a sadar, a qazi, a kotwal, a mir bahar, and waqa-e-nawais. The subedar or governor was the head of the provincial administration. He enjoyed vast powers. He possessed executive, judiciary, and legislative powers. The diwan was in charge of the provincial purse, and all bills or payments were signed by him. Bakshi looked after the management of the provincial army. The Sardar was appointed by the central government and was in charge of the provincial charity department. The Qazi was in charge of the judicial department. Kotwal was the supreme administrator of all the thanas of the province and was responsible for the maintenance of law and order in all the cities. The Mir Bahar was in charge of customs, boats and ferry taxes and port duties of the province. The Waj-e-Nawais were in charge of secret service of the province. He appointed newswriters and spies and kept the central government informed of everything that was going on. The provinces were further divided into sarkars and sarkars into pragnas. The head of the sarkar was the faujdar. He was in charge of law and order. The head of pragnas was called a sikdar. Each village was under the charge of a mukadim, patwari and a chokidar. Military administration. Akbar paid much attention towards the organization, equipment and discipline of the army. Akbar introduced a new system known as the Mansabdari system. The Mansabdars had to maintain soldiers according to his grade or rank. There were 33 grades of these Mansabdars from 10 to 10,000. They were paid for their salaries in cash. They were directly under the control of the emperor. A large number of the army would be supplied by these Mansabdars at the time of war. The Mughal army consisted of infantry, cavalry, artillery, elephants and navy. Land revenue administration. The revenue of Akbar's empire may be grouped under two heads, central revenue and provincial revenue. Provincial revenue consisted of the duties and taxes levied upon the production and consumption on trade and occupation and all means of transport. The major sources of central revenue were land revenue, customs, mint, inheritance, plunder, and presents handed over in the form of revenue formed the main sources of revenue. Akbar introduced several revenue reforms. In this task, he was ably assisted by Raja Todar Mal, Mufazar Khan, and others. His efficient revenue system was the outcome of the years of sustained labor and experimentation. Akbar introduced a thorough reorganization of the existing system. The chief features were 1. Survey and measurement of the land. 2. Classification of the land. 3. Fixation of rates. Under him, lands were carefully surveyed and was classified into four classes according to the continuity of cultivation. Only the area under actual cultivation was taken into assessment and the demand fixed on the average produce. The demand of the state was fixed at 1/3 of the average produce, which was payable either in cash or kind. Judicial administration. Akbar had a very high sense of justice. He gave importance to the distribution of justice equally to all people. He made no fundamental changes in the judicial system inherited from his predecessors. He appointed several judges for the Muslims and the Hindus. The emperor's court was the highest court of appeal. Akbar spent all his time on Thursdays in hearing and deciding important cases. Next to emperor was chief qazi, was the highest judicial authority. He appointed provincial, district and city judges. The provincial governors also heard cases like the emperor's. The punishments given to the culprits were very severe. Imprisonment, fines, confiscation of property, flogging, mutilation of limbs, banishments and evacuation were common punishments. Akbar as the patron of arts and letters. Akbar was a great patron of the arts and letters. He patronized many artists and men of letters. He loved the company of scholars and writers. Being in their company, he had acquired great knowledge about theology, literature, poetry, and philosophy. Many poets and writers enjoyed the patronage of Akbar. Among them, the most famous were Abdul Fazal, Abdul Fazi, Birbal, and Prithvi Singh Lahore. Persian, Sanskrit, and Hindi literatures flourished under the patronage of Akbar. Akbar was a great builder. His building activities can be found in his dream city, Fatehpur Sikri, near Agra. The new capital was flooded with many remarkable buildings. Among them, the most famous were Diwan-e-Am, Diwan-e-Khas, Juma Mahal, and Buland Darwaza. He patronized many musicians. Among them, most celebrated was Tansen. According to Abdul Fazal, a singer like him has not been in India for the last 1,000 years. Last days of Akbar. The last days of Akbar were crowded with sorrow and unhappiness. His beloved Salim, in his eagerness to seize power, revolted against his father, set himself as an independent ruler at Allahabad. In 1602, he further wounded the feelings of Akbar by causing the death of Abdul Fazal. In 1603, a temporary reconciliation was effected between Salim and his father. In the meantime, while some nobles plotted for the ascension of Kusaru, the son of Salim, but it failed. As Salim became the only surviving son, Akbar reconciled to him. He breathed his last in 1605. 3.11. Estimate of Akbar. Akbar's idealism, natural gifts, force of character, and concrete achievements entitle him to a high place among the rulers of mankind. His lofty patriotism and intellectual superiority raise him above all other rulers of idealism and realism, earning him credit as the most successful monarch of India. Akbar's age was an age of great monarchs like Elizabeth I of England, Henry IV of France, and Shah Abbas of Persia, and undoubtedly he was more prominent than any of them in more than one respect. Thus, the character and personality of Akbar was that of a grand monarch. He was successful both as an individual and an emperor. His life and ideals were inspiring to others as a ruler, conqueror, administrator, statesman, and a monarch. That is why Akbar alone has been regarded as the great among Mughal rulers. 3.11. Let us sum up. Our attempt in this unit was to discuss with you about the continued efforts and long struggle of Sher Shah to capture the throne of Delhi from Mughals in 1540 after the decisive battle of Kanauj with Humayun. Further, you will study that Sher Shah ruled only for 5 years, from 1540 to 1545, and within a short period, how he introduced wonderful reforms in different fields and earned a good name in the history of medieval India. Also, you have studied that how Akbar ruled over India more than half a century and enhanced the prestige of the Mughal dynasty in India. Further, you will study in this unit that how Akbar considered as a national monarch and earned the title the Great among all Mughal emperors. In addition to this, the religious and Rajput policy of Akbar was not only novel but extremely successful. These were largely responsible for power and glory of the Mughal Empire. 3.13. Check your progress. Mark right or wrong on statements given below. A. Sher Shah became the emperor after the Battle of Surajgarh. B. The Purana Qila at Delhi was built by Sher Shah. C. Sher Shah breathed his last in 1555. D. Akbar was born in Amarkot in 1542. E. The Second Battle of Panipat was fought in 1556 between Akbar and Hemu. D. Raja Todar Mal was an independent Raja of Bengal. 2. Write 3 lines on the following. A. Raj Mahan Singh. B. Abdul Fazal. C. Din-e-Ilahi. 3. Write a paragraph on Bairam Khan.